Greetings, once again, to all my enemies and all my friends. You may have heard the news, but stand by now for the worldview. It is the Weekly Worldview, and I'm your host, Doug McBurney. Welcome back. It's the show where we don't take calls. We don't tolerate sponsors, but we do help focus you on the events of the week through the lens of original thought. It's good to be back on a special Monday edition. That's right. No, I wasn't traveling or doing anything like that. I was trying to recover from a series of illnesses that have racked the entire McBurney compound over the past 3 weeks or so. I had to take 3 days and just let the pipes rest. That's what I had to do. So I come to you now, assisted only by vitamin C and Nestle Toll House morsels. Ooh, morsels. They're not even kisses, they're morsels. It's like a Hershey's Kiss, but without the top. It's a morsel. A little chocolate to lubricate the throat, and hopefully we can get through it. Well, also, as you know, I didn't want to go on yesterday with only a summary account of the Mueller report. I was hoping to have the whole report today, but apparently we will not be getting it. I'm sorry to disappoint you, because I was hoping to use the Mueller report, or the report on the report, to basically carry my show for me. I was going to have guests come on and talk about the Mueller report, and that way I could just sit back and I wouldn't have to actually think creatively or try to do anything to inspire or entertain or elucidate you people. I could just do a Sean Hannity, have 14 guests come on and talk about a report that, but no, I'm not going to be able to do that because we don't have the report. Do I want to say something on the Mueller report? Maybe. I think I'd rather talk about adventures at the Chrysler dealership, but maybe we'll get to that. Maybe we'll get to that later. Adventures at the Chrysler dealership. We'll come back to the Mueller report, because obviously you can hear about that on a million and six other outlets incessantly all the time. I don't know what they're going to do now. The Mueller investigation is over. Is it the end of the Trump opera? Is it the end of the Trump bump in the ratings for all of the cable news shows? Well, we'll just have to see. We'll come back to that. I want to start with a story from the BBC. This is from the Science File. Scientists who study the brain and the nervous system say the age at which you become an adult is different for everyone, but they peg it at approximately 30 years of age. That's right, 30 years of age. They say it's a nuanced transition that takes place over 3 decades. Basically implying that it could happen sooner for some and later for others. And I tend to agree with this, that you're generally not an adult until you're about 30, based on my knowledge of anatomy and neurology and psychology and physiology. It's probably about right. Not that you can't act like an adult when you're younger, or do things that are adult when you're younger, but you're not really a full adult until you're about 30. And I don't want to make it fun of anyone. I don't want to make fun of millennials or anyone else based on this story, because I generally agree with it. And by the way, 30, I can tell you this. I've met a number of 30-somethings who are definitely still children, or at least they act like children. So you're an adult at about 30, but you can behave like an adult before you're 30, and you can behave like a child after you're 30. And what else did I have to say about that? Well, not much, but I thought that might be, illuminate some of the other stories that we're going to get to here as we move forward. I got now our next one. That was the Science File. This is the Science Really File. That's right. We're back to the multiverse here. I don't want to beat a dead horse, but I have to let you people know what's going on with the multiverse. And the aliens, we'll get to multiverse and aliens, because as I've predicted for the better part of the decade, leftist liberals and God haters, atheists and self-absorbed evil people are eagerly preparing. I shouldn't say eagerly. They are assiduously preparing for the collapse of Darwinian evolution and that whole thing. And then we're going to go to the multiverse and the aliens, and it grows and grows every week. We've got a story from LiveScience.com. Can two versions of reality exist? The author asks. Can two versions of reality exist at the same time? Physicists say yes, they can. Ancient alien theorists say yes. Yeah, indeed. They talk about now 1961, Nobel Prize winner for physics Eugene Wigner introduced a thought experiment that became known as Wigner's Friend. It begins with a photon, a particle of light. When an observer in an isolated laboratory measures the photon, they find that the particle's polarization, meaning the axis on which it spins, is either vertical or horizontal, and they record that. And let me go back to the first sentence. The author of the article at Live Science introduced it as, can two versions of reality exist at the same time? Question mark. Ancient alien theorists say yes. Physicists say yes. So they talk about the Wigner's Friend experiment, and the axis of the photon is measured in an isolated lab as either vertical or horizontal. However, before the photon is measured, the photon displays both polarizations at once as dictated by the laws of quantum mechanics. It exists in a superposition of two possible states. Once the person in the lab measures the photon, the particle assumes a fixed polarization. But for someone outside that closed laboratory who doesn't know the result of the measurement, the unmeasured photon is still in a state of superposition. Are you with me, people? Anyway, that's all. I know quantum mechanics is kind of mind-bending, but that's all true, right? It's been observed that observation of something seems to fix its position in physical reality. And certain things can maintain superpositions where they could go either way, or they appear to go either way. It's wild stuff, quantum mechanics. It's definitely above my pay grade to try to explain it to you people. But I can't explain urinalism, which is what we're going to get to right now in the Live Science Report, because in the next sentence, the author says, that outsider's observation, their reality, therefore, it diverges from the reality of the person in the lab who measured the photon. Yet neither of those conflicting observations is thought to be wrong. Okay, so here's the thing. The reality didn't diverge. Two different observations were made of the same situation. Neither one of them are wrong, but reality was consistent, okay? Reality does not diverge. Okay, it just allows for both interpretations of a particular state of a photon, that's all. But this author is trying to deceive and trick generally stupid people, which most people are. I mean, let's just get it out there, folks. I would say about 30% of the people are just morons, okay? And they're just barely scraping by, and we're basically carrying them. You know, there's about 20% of us who pretty much do everything. And then there's 30% who can't do anything. Well, how much is that? 50%? So I did matriculate in the government schools. I need a calculator. And then there's half the people who are just decent, hardworking people, and it's hard for them to keep up. They're trying to pay attention, and I love them. Okay, but the 30% really annoy me, all right? That's all. And so this author is trying to trick not only the 30% who are guaranteed, but the other 50% in the middle. The 20% of us, we're never going to be tricked by this kind of stupidity. But there's a lot of people who aren't able to focus. And so anyway, and then this final sentence, yet neither of those conflicting observations is thought to be wrong. And isn't that really what this author and the atheistic quantum physicists, isn't this what they really want? They want to not be wrong. They want right and wrong to not be absolute. That's really what their quest is for. And that's what an awful lot of physicists hoped that quantum mechanics would prove that there is no right or wrong. But it turns out, I mean, unless you're a moron and you're gullible, that quantum mechanics doesn't help you with the problem of your sin against other people and the living God. And the day that you're going to have to give an account to your creator, quantum mechanics is not going to help with that. And neither is quantum physics. And neither are aliens. I'm sorry, I should. Neither are aliens. Okay. Or the multiverse. All right. Now, so there's your multiverse. Now let's get to the aliens, okay? Not to be left out of the whole multiverse discussion, we have another story here from the science. Really, file? About the UFO community. In the last 2 years, according to the Philadelphia Inquirer, scientists, politicians, and professionals have increasingly been willing to touch the taboo subject of belief in UFOs. Yes, yes. And lend credence to those who still believe in UFOs. So this technically is not exactly aliens. This is UFOs. That would be the craft in which the believers hope that they'll find aliens. All right. So over the past 2 years, I've noticed this too. And it's kind of strange that we get through, at least in America, we get through the Obama administration, the most leftist lurch of government in American history. And then there's a lurch back to something not quite as leftist in Donald Trump, certainly not conservatism, but at least Americanism or maybe nationalism. But still, the aliens and the UFOs and the multiverse, that whole situation just seems to keep snowballing with no end in sight except just getting bigger and bigger. And I think it's because most of the rest of the world has already gone straight to hell in a handbasket. And America, too, for the most part. But anyway, let's get back to the UFOs. Over the past 2 years, more people seem willing to talk about it. The New York Times, in fact, according to the Philadelphia Inquirer, uncovered that the U.S. had funded a secret $22 million five-year project to study UFO claims. That to go interview all the people in their station wagons and trailer parks who have seen these UFOs. And that costs a lot of money. So you got to go from trailer park to trailer park. Anyway, the chairman of Harvard University's astronomy department has said he may believe. One scientist at NASA says he may believe. They've come out, they said. No. They've come out to suggest closer study of the roles extraterrestrials may play in certain phenomena, you see. So the author now here at the Philadelphia Inquirer has just given what is called an appeal to authority to lend himself some credibility because he has no facts. So he says, hey, the chairman at Harvard, a NASA scientist, they're coming out saying we need to look at this. So now your average person out there thinks that this guy has some credibility because they saw the word Harvard and NASA. Oh, Harvard and NASA. Gee, maybe I should pay attention. Anyway, so what has changed, asked the Philadelphia Inquirer. Well, they say what has changed is our understanding of the universe. As scientists have discovered more Earth-like exoplanets, it starts to become, well, I guess they think it's like a numbers game. There's so many Earth-like planets out there, there has to be aliens. And I've got a quote here. Let's see here. We still think of ourselves as a species as the center of everything, says Robert Powell, an executive board member of the Scientific Coalition for Ufology. Or maybe it's UFology? Anyway, so who is this guy? Robert Powell, executive board member. Ooh, he sounds important. He's not just a board member. He's an executive board member. Well, yeah, but it's the Scientific Coalition of Ufology. It's not like he's a chairman at Harvard. Okay? It's not like he's on the board of even Rice Krispies, for crying out loud. It's the Scientific Coalition for Ufology. We still think of ourselves as a species as the center of everything, he says. Let's see. The challenge with UFO. No, that's UFO. Wasn't that a band in the 70s? So anyways, this I just want to say that this quote from this this board member, this distinguished executive board member of the Scientific Coalition for Ufology, kind of gets to the heart of why everyone is searching for UFOs and multiverses and exoplanets and Earth-like planets, is because they don't want us to be at the center of everything. They don't want us to be special. They don't want us to be a special creation by a living God. They don't want to be held accountable. And that's where the search goes. And I find it interesting. By the way, here's the final paragraph. The challenge with UFO and alien sightings has always been the lack of evidence. Oh, yeah. Hey, hello. Yeah, how about that? Isn't it odd that at nearly a century of belief and hype around aliens and UFOs and Earth-like planets and exoplanets and alternate civilizations and other, and there's how much evidence? Zero, none, not a nothing, not a speck, not a quark's worth. Yet 2,000 years of Christian belief, how about, what has that yielded? Well, it's made certain by the observable evidence which is all around you. The heavens declare the glory of God. I would almost think that my extremely attractive audio engineer is also suggesting that marijuana may have something with all, especially over the past 2 years. I think you're right. Now that it's legalized, it's normalized. Where was I last time? I was in New York City.
D.C.
Well, D.C., it's legal. New York City, it's not even legal, but every block you got hit in the face by it. So it's the fact that it's normalized is what it is now. It's normalized, which is what they always wanted, so that the 30% could be totally destroyed and they start chipping away at the 50%. That's it, right? All right. Now, I want a quick hit there on the Mueller report, since I know that is a topic of interest to so many people. And the demographic studies tell us if we don't mention the Mueller report at least at the top of every segment, we could lose 1/3 of our audience. Each segment, we have 4 segments, so by the end we'd lose 120% of our audience. And we don't want to do that. We can't afford to go in the hole. So I want to make a couple of predictions. Number one, that by the end of this week, Bob Mueller will be a hero to Republicans and an enemy of Democrats. That's, in fact, I could have made that prediction by the end of Tuesday, I think. But we'll see. You can judge me if I'm right or wrong. Another, I don't know if this is a prediction or just an observation, but I believe that the Mueller report has been a success for the Democrat Party in their efforts, especially for Hillary and a whole bunch of Obama administration officials who participated in just massive amounts of criminal behavior. And the fact that Bob Mueller was able to muddy the waters just enough for a couple of years probably means that none of these people who spied on Americans and just did some of the most heinous things that in politics that have ever been done, none of them will ever be held to account, because Bob Mueller was able to come in with the flim-flam and the shim-sham and the three-card Monty and the whole game to just game it and muddy it up and get it just confused enough to where nobody will be able to. Although I've got to say, it is kind of funny. It is kind of ironic that the only person indicted and arrested after the Mueller report was finally released turns out to be Michael Avenatti. Do you remember him? He said to his extremely attractive audio engineer. Do you remember Michael Avenatti? She doesn't, right? Because nobody will remember this guy ever. 100 years from now, nobody's going to remember who this guy is. He was the lawyer for the stripper. He was that real sleazy-looking lawyer with the...
Oh, that guy.
Yeah. He's arrested today for trying to shake down Nike. Him and him and that other, that Mark Garagos. That guy's a lowlife. How come Garagos wasn't arrested? Well, we'll hear all about that. But anyway, I believe that the The people who conceived in their black little hearts to make the Mueller report happen, to make the Mueller investigation happen, they are judging it a success today. It would be a success no matter what happened because the whole object was to obfuscate and muddy the waters, and they've done that. All right. So there you have that. What else do we have here? We'll go to, do I want to do this? All right. You know what? I'm already feel like I'm running out of time. I'm already looking at what I got here, and there's just not enough. So I have to, you people have to listen quickly. All right. We'll move on now to reason number 1,184 to get or keep your children out of the government schools is because the government schools are so obviously godless that they lead to a dramatic increase in the risk of suicide. Yes, a second student from Marjorie Stoneman Douglas High School has died of an apparent suicide late Saturday, according to this article from Breitbart. It was a male sophomore. Last weekend, Sydney Ayeo, a 19-year-old who survived the massacre and had graduated, killed herself, reportedly out of grief and survivor's guilt. Yeah. Two of Ayalo's best friends were among the dead. She couldn't deal with it. Her family says she'd been treated for PTSD. She suffered from survivor's guilt and all of that. So here's and then last night on our local news here in Denver, they talked about a Columbine organization of ex-Columbine students and other professional empathizers organized to help people with their survivor's guilt. And ironically, it's called the Rebels Project, to help with survivor's guilt. It's because the Columbine, their team mascot was the Rebels, I guess. Anyway, and it talks about how these Columbine professional empathizers are headed down to Parkland to help people deal with their survivor's guilt. You know, I wonder if we could do a survey. I wonder if it's possible to go back in time and find out how many Civil War survivors or Holocaust survivors committed suicide over survivor's guilt. I just wonder out loud. Actually, my extremely attractive audio engineer wondered that out loud. Wondered that aloud during the news last night. My guess is if we could go back in history and find out how many American Civil War survivors or Holocaust survivors committed suicide over survivor's guilt, it would not be enough to inspire a club to be formed. That's just my guess because, you know, back then there was a tremendous taboo against suicide and a lot more people believed in God. Even if they weren't particularly, I'm saying maybe they weren't born again saved people, but they had this, we had a cultural common understanding that there was a God. And there were a lot more born-again saved people, don't get me wrong, and a lot more seriously religious Jews who actually believed in their creator. And so people didn't, the survivor's guilt is not as hard to deal with if you believe in eternal destiny, that we're all going somewhere, and that there's a creator and a judge who's going to make everything right. All the people who were dealt with unjustly and killed unjustly, the scales are going to be balanced back to equilibrium by God. And so, but here's the thing. Godless people do not handle death well. They do not. And Marjorie Stoneman Douglas School, along with every government school in the country, is officially aggressively godless, aggressively designed to inoculate your children against salvation and a knowledge and a relationship with the living God. That's what they're designed to do. And we can see now that what that produces in the minds of these young people. They can't deal with death and they can't deal with guilt because, well, they've been taught that there should be no such thing as guilt. You shouldn't feel bad about anything. You evolved from a one-celled, single-celled nothing. And you're going on out into oblivion. There's nothing out there. How could you possibly feel guilty? But for some reason, they do feel guilty. And then they're not instructed on how to correctly deal with their guilt and their shame and their sin and all of that. And that drives people crazy. So reason number 1,184 to keep or get your children out of the government schools. The government schools will make them insane people. And they might kill themselves. It Could happen. All right. Now, more to the young people. Let's see here. Let me check this off my list here. All right. More than half the young people in America, according to San Francisco Chronicle, do not have a romantic partner. Yeah, there's been a study by the Pew Research Center. They noted that women are having fewer children. They're having them later in life. The median age of marriage is increasing. And now, the Pew Research Center says among those never married but open to it, most say a major reason that they don't have a romantic partner is that they haven't found the right person. They're searching for the right person. That's right. So the young people have been convinced that the right person, they've either been convinced that the right person is out there and God has a plan to put you together with them, or you have to find the right person and you need to try a few on first and maybe even live with them for a while. And what that's done is it's produced a generation of dysfunctional people. They're emotionally, relationally dysfunctional. Let's go to a 22-year-old student at the University of Georgia, Caitlin. She says she's open to love if it walked into her life, but she's not actively looking for it. She says, quote, "I'm like too busy. Honestly, I travel a lot and I have a great group of friends that I hang out with. I'm working, you know, and like studying for a degree in urinalism." All right. That's great. Wonderful. Her parents must be thrilled. Just thrilled that she doesn't. She's 22 years old. She's not interested. And she's waiting for love to walk into her. If it walked in, you know, what's this? It's like a Van Halen song, right? If love walked in, hey, I might be open to it. But she's not open to it, and she's not seeking it because she's a self-absorbed person who is obsessed with personal comfort and fun and pleasure and money. And what do you expect to come out of the government schools and the university systems but self-absorbed people obsessed with satisfying themselves instead of thinking about perpetuating the civilization and serving other people? Anyway, it's very sad. It's very sad that, in my daily work, I encounter a lot of these people who are not even remotely concerned with getting married and having children. A bunch of them in the up-and-coming generation. And it does not bode well for the future of civilization. Now, was there a greater point that I wanted to make about this story? I don't think there was. Oh, I know. I wanted to talk about Colorado's governor, Governor Jared Polis, and the Democrat legislature here are obsessed. They are obsessed with sex education in the public schools. They're obsessed with it, and they're obsessed with getting homosexuality and transgenderism and all kinds of other perversion into kids' minds as early as possible. And so parents here in Denver have started to protest. Some of the suburban parents and some of the more rural school districts are starting to become astonished at what our flaming homosexual pervert governor wants to teach their children. And they're shocked by it. And so they're protesting. You should have seen them with their signs standing outside the Capitol. What a hapless bunch of losers they were. Just pathetic. You want to protest? I'll show you how to protest. We protested here at the McBurney compound. Our protest began in 2006 when we registered our first child for homeschool. Uh-huh. That's how these parents should have protested if they had half a brain. Should I be more... maybe I should be more compassionate with parents and assume that they're just misled and ignorant of the facts. But you know what? I really think it's a little too late in the game for that. I really don't have any pity or any room to hear excuses from parents who put their kids into schools that are so obviously dangerous, evil, wicked, and horrible. And now that you've got a legislature, and you've got a legislature full of creeps and perverts, thieves and liars. I mean, it's run by the Democrat Party. You've got a governor who's married to a husband, for crying out loud. And that's the governing authority that's going to educate your children. I'm sorry, folks. The time for excuses is long past. The time to wake up is long past. The time to take action is now. Get or keep your kids out of the government schools. All right, we're back. It's the Weekly Worldview. All right, put the saxophone away and get out of here with that. All right. I wouldn't have let that play so long, but I had to get down a few more of these Nestle Toll House morsels. And I had to take the bag away and point it away for my extremely attractive audio engineer. She might have consumed the whole bag. It's easy to do because they're small. Anyway, they're helping with my throat a lot. So I'm glad we have them here, but I had to put them over here out of reach. I had to put them out of both of our reach. Okay. So I want to get to Adventures at the Chrysler Dealership. Yes, my extremely attractive audio engineer and I found ourselves at the Chrysler Dealership this past week. And it's a place that I never thought I would have found myself, was a Chrysler Dealership. But of course, the only reason we were at the Chrysler Dealership was to buy a used Toyota. Because there's no way I would, not to say anything bad about Chrysler, I just personally would never buy one. So anyway, what happened here at the McBurney compound was you heard about the blizzard. You heard about the blizzard that hit Denver with the 80-mile-an-hour winds. Well, it blew our Toyota off the road, and we had a crash, and the vehicle was totaled. Airbags deployed. Everybody was okay, but the truck was totaled, so we had to find a new one. And my extremely attractive and gracious and generous audio engineer agreed not to demand that I buy her a brand new vehicle, which she had every right to do. She did, yes. Or you did, I should say. She had every right to, because the last time I bought a car, it was brand new. And so we've had an agreement that, you know, back and forth. You get a new one, I get a used one. If you get a used one, I get a new one. Anyway, it's one of the few perks we have in our life is every once in a while we buy a new car. But she agreed to buy the same model, the same year, the same everything. And so we found one at the Chrysler dealership. And there were a couple of items on this used vehicle that made me a little bit nervous. And so I told the salesman, I said, there are a couple of items that I would like your mechanic to check out. And if they check out, I'll buy that vehicle and I'll take it off your lot today. And I'll even go with your no-haggle price. I had tried to haggle, and they weren't kidding. They would not haggle. But it was a good price. Anyway, he said, you know, our used car mechanics are not in on Saturday. And so we'll make an arrangement to have that looked at. We'll put it in writing that we'll fix anything that's wrong. And at the time, I didn't think anything of it. But then later on, I realized, what is a used car mechanic? Is there, oh, it's a Chrysler dealership. So you need used car mechanics for the used cars and then new car mechanics to fix the new cars. I get it now. I think they only have those at Chrysler dealerships. At Toyota dealerships, they only have mechanics. And they generally work on the used cars and mostly ones from Detroit. All right, I don't want to beat up my great Americans out there. You're all great Americans. All right. Now let's go. Should I talk about ISIS? So it's the end of ISIS or something like that, right? The president declared that ISIS has been utterly defeated. And that's great news that their last physical or caliphate stronghold. I think I have a story about it here. Hold on a second. Hold on. I have to go through. No, maybe the Kurds who've been fighting against ISIS. They say that. Let's see here. The top Syrian Kurdish commander said on Saturday, while we were at the Chrysler dealership, the top Syrian Kurdish commander said that the defeat of the Islamic State, The defeat of the Islamic State's territorial caliphate begins a new phase in operations against the jihadists. Now, Trump says they're defeated, but this warrior, a leader of the Syrian Kurds, he knows better. He knows they're not defeated. He knows that they've just been chased out of this building or this town or whatever. But the ideology certainly hasn't been defeated. And this fella, listen to the name of the Kurdish fighter. I have a thing with the Kurds. I mean, I personally just don't want to ally myself with any Muslims in this fight because I don't trust any of them. I'm sorry. I think their worldview is satanic, socialistic, geopolitical domination. And I don't want to participate that on any level, even to save my own life. And the reason we work with the Kurds is so our guys won't get killed. Well, that's just a bad deal, I'm telling you. Anyway, the leader of the Kurds' name is Mazlum Kobane. His name is Mazlum. It's just weird. Anyway, he says the focus of upcoming military operations will be the elimination of sleeper cells, which he says are a great threat to our region and the whole world. So, yes, ISIS has been, the caliphate has been defeated. That is true. But the ideology and an awful lot of the maniac madmen who participated in this, a five-year just bloodbath that's occurred in Iraq and Syria, they haven't been defeated. Or they haven't been killed. They haven't been killed, so they all need to be killed. I don't know how we do that. I'd like to figure that out. All right. Meanwhile, so there, ISIS. All right, the end of ISIS. Let's check them off our list. It'd be nice if we could do that. I've got a new file called the Global Civil War File. Yeah. This is from Reuters. They say that there's been a survey, a survey sponsored by the OECD. What is that? How can you put OECD in the first paragraph and not say what it is? Isn't that common sense that you put a comma and a parenthesis and you put what that stands for? But they don't do that until you get down here into the fourth paragraph. The Organization for Economic Cooperation and Development. This is the state of urinalism in America. I thought it was OCD. Well, what is that? It's obsessive compulsive disorder. Anyway, it's OECD. Obsessive excessive compulsive disorder. No, it's the Organization for Economic Cooperation and Development. They've done a survey of 21 countries, thousands and thousands of people, and they discover that more than half of the people polled said they were in favor of taxing the rich more to support the poor. The term rich was not defined in the survey, but people want to, so, and they were also in favor of higher taxation on wealthy people. Uh-huh, right? What else? Let's see here. They want wealthy countries to do more to help poor people. And the Reuters goes on to talk about the yellow vest protesters in France who apparently are demanding that the wealthy bear a bigger tax burden. So shock of all shocks, the majority of people want to tax the rich and take their money. That's democracy for you right there. And the reason I call this the Global Civil War File is because eventually, if you give democratic institutions enough time and opportunity, they're going to actually do it. They're going to try to physically take the wealth of the people who have it for themselves because they're the majority. They're going to vote themselves, and then when the rich don't give it to them, they're going to kill the rich and eat them and take all their money. And that means there's coming a global civil war if things don't dramatically change. Portugal and Greece, they wanted to tax the rich the most, nearly 80% of them. But on average, about 70% of the world wants to tax the rich more. Does this fit into my calculation? Yeah, it's the 50% who are just regular people and the 20% who are losers. There's your 70%. They all want to take the rich's money. And that's a scary thing when a significant majority of people want to steal other people's money and you give them the means through democracy to vote it in and make it legal. Well, eventually it's going to happen. And so that's very concerning to me. Now, I'm not rich, but I have enough that these people be coming to my house They wouldn't want to take my house and my car and my money and everything. And so anyway, that concerns me, but I know I'll be all right. I'll find a way. I plan to get by on charm if necessary. If it comes down to that. They come with the pitchforks and the torches and the automatic weapons. All right. Now, speaking of that, let's go to Venezuela. So you got 70% of people who want to take the rich's money. Now, they say, no, we just want the rich to do more. We just want the rich to do more. But the thing is, that never ends until eventually it's we want the rich. We want to eat the rich, and they will try. All right. Meanwhile, the United States is growing gravely concerned about the welfare and safety of U.S. persons being detained in Venezuela. This is according to the Wall Street Journal. 12 Americans are being held by the Maduro regime, including 6 executives at Citgo, the gasoline company. They've been in custody since November 2017. Maduro says they'll be tried for being traitors against the fatherland. Uh-oh, the fatherland. Last time somebody called their country the fatherland, that didn't work out too well. I think we need to get rid of this guy, militarily if necessary. Didn't I see a story that the Russians had landed a few hundred troops down there, apparently to try to, I don't know what. Why are the Russians landing troops in Venezuela? I think it's ominous. In fact, I'm surprised it's gone on this long, as bad as it's been. But anyway, it just proves that we live in a state of relative inability to act. Because no one's quite sure of themselves anymore. We live in an environment of general inability to act decisively because of a lack of confidence on all sides. Nobody's quite sure who they are or what they are anymore, what they believe in. Whether you're a Russian or a Venezuelan or an American or an Englishman or a Frenchman, there's just no sure thing anymore. Everything's so fluid that we end up unable to get rid of, to make a decision to get rid of one of the worst human beings and one of the worst governments, one of the worst atrocities that's occurring right here in our own hemisphere. We don't know how to act. The Russians know they're supposed to back him up. They're not sure how to act. Nobody's sure how to act anymore. All right. Well, something, I believe it's going to come to a head, but I could be wrong. It could be that nothing happens except people continue to starve in Venezuela. Anyway, I just found it odd that a few hundred troops would be landed by the Russians. It just seems strange. Meanwhile, great news, fantastic news, news to be celebrated from the Daily Caller, from the Politics File. The Southern Poverty Law Center President Richard Cohen resigned last Friday. And what's even better about that is that he resigned just over a week after the co-founder, Morris Dees, was fired by the Southern Poverty Law Center. And this is just, you can't write this. This is poetic justice. The Southern Poverty Law Center has been a shakedown operation, shaking down normal Christian people and calling them haters and saying anyone who wasn't willing to bow their knee at the altar of homosexuality, transgenderism, all kinds of corruption and perversion, socialism, that we're all haters. Well, it turns out current and former SPLC employees have accused the organization of turning a blind eye to sexual harassment and racial discrimination within its own ranks. That's right. Now, the SPLC was founded with some good ideals to try to help to improve the environment for black people to work and live and be free. But they soon moved into just a bunch of race-hustling, homosexual, perverts, shakedown artists, socialists, and creeps. And now we see that they're actually creeps, yes. Former SPLC staffer Bob Moser, who is a creep. This guy is one of the worst human beings on the planet. How do I know that? He worked for the SPLC. That's... Anyway... He says he now describes the SPLC as a highly profitable scam, surviving on massive donations from gullible donors. He says, He never lived up to the values he despised. Yeah, well, when he was taking a paycheck, that wasn't true. He never said that, right? He participated in the scam. It's nice to see that you saw the light there, Mr. Moser. But don't expect any congratulations from me. You're still not even, you still don't even rank among those who should be allowed to be included in civilization just because you worked for them. You've got a lot to prove, Mr. Moser. The Daily Caller reminds us that the SPLC is known to label conservative organizations as hate groups, and they are a key resource for Amazon, Google, and other tech companies in policing what they call hate speech. The SPLC has $500 million in assets gleaned from their gullible donors as they sexually harass each other and slung racial epithets around the office, all in the name of serving liberal humanity. It's just, I hope that whole thing tanks and sinks and burns to the ground in a rhetorical sense. I hope it, a year from now the SPLC doesn't exist. I hope this is just the tip of the iceberg of the rot within what has always been obvious to me as a rotten organization, but has somehow managed to bamboozle not just the 30, not just the 20% who are bamboozleable easily every time, but the 50%, yes, all of them, they've been bamboozled, and the SPLC's been at the heart of it, and hopefully the chickens are coming home to roost. I'm your host, Doug McBurney. Welcome back. It's so good to have you with us as we romp forward into another week with no signs of racism here at the McBurney compound. That was an African-American artist.
No.
Yes, we play African-American artists without any discrimination here.
He's a mix.
What?
Cuban too, right? No?
I don't know. I thought he was a black fella from Minneapolis. All right. Now let's go to Barbara Streisand. Speaking of African-American artists who are somewhat ambiguous about their African-Americanism. Barbara Streisand, this is from the Straight to Hell with Jet Rockets file, but where Barbara Streisand is a headlining act. Yes. Well, she addressed the two men who are accusing Michael Jackson of molesting them when they were kids. And she said that Wade Robinson and James Safechuck, the men who made the allegations, she said, quote, they were thrilled to be there, unquote. And she said that what happened to them, quote, didn't kill them, unquote. She also said that in regards to Michael Jackson's sexual appetite for children, she said, quote, Jackson's sexual needs were his sexual needs, unquote. So basically just forgive. Now she's come out and apologized profusely, saying that she didn't choose her words correctly. And she's so sorry. And Babs, that's, don't even bother. Straight to hell with Jet Rockets, baby. That's what you got coming. Don't even try to apologize, because your apology is fake, phony, and frivolous. We know you're a liar. We know how you feel. You know that you would put your phony baloney relationship with Michael Jackson and all of the fame and the fortune that you and he shared in your glitzy world of total self-absorption and total security from ever being judged by anybody. You would never let anything violate that little fantasy world that you lived in, Barbara. That's why you're going straight to hell with Jet Rockets, and you'll meet Michael Jackson there. Or you know what, Barbara? You'll probably meet him on the way as you pass him to a lower part of hell. How about that? All right, now, speaking of Michael Jackson, a Georgia woman slashed her boyfriend with a sword after she caught him molesting her 5-year-old daughter. Barbara, for you to say it didn't hurt them and they were thrilled to be there, you're just an evil person, Barbara. This is how a mother, a parent, responds when they find someone actually hurting their kid. Grab a sword. Try to hack the guy. Anyway, her live-in boyfriend was arrested and charged with aggravated child molestation. Here's the thing, folks. Don't shack up. Because when you shack up and you have kids, you're putting your children in danger. So this isn't really a heroic woman. She just had the natural response of a mother when she sees her child being hurt. Grab a sword, try to kill the guy. I mean, I can respect that, but it's not really special or heroic. What would have been more heroic is if she wouldn't have been shacking up with this loser who ends up doing this. It's a shame. Well, it's more than a shame. It's a sin. I mean, anyway, I can't imagine. What happens to a kid once something like that has happened to them? How do they ever recover from that? That's why it should be the death penalty. The police say that the molester was treated with a cut on his hand. I wouldn't have gone for his hand, I can tell you that. All right, let's go now to... I was upset last time I was on the air about the fact that these rural sheriffs, are now standing up against the tyrannical directives from our federal and state government about taking our guns away. So these rural sheriffs are standing up against tyranny when it comes to the Second Amendment and the right to keep and bear arms, and I was rather upset and asking, when is someone going to stand up against the same tyranny for the right to life for unborn children? Well, here we go, Roswell, New Mexico. Well, kind of. You tell me what you think, people. The City Council of Roswell passed a resolution declaring its jurisdiction to be in support of fetal life, and local pro-life activists there say that this makes Roswell a sanctuary city for the unborn. And so I respect the student council there in Roswell. We all appreciate your efforts. The resolution declares, quote, that innocent human life, including fetal life, must always be protected and that society must protect those who cannot protect themselves. The resolution also states opposition to any diminution by the New Mexico legislature of the limitations on abortion and honors the rights of healthcare providers to object on moral grounds to performing abortions and opposes any regulation or law seeking to violate that. All right, this is just a little too wishy-washy for me. If you're going to oppose any diminution by the New Mexico legislature against the limitation, you're saying you won't let them change the rules that you've already passed on killing kids. And you're going to allow healthcare providers to object to what? Object to performing abortions as if that's legitimate. Anyway, this is not as good as I thought. Whatever. First of all, and the student council can't enforce this. See, they're just the student council there in Roswell. What needs to happen is the sheriff needs to walk down to any clinic that is either aborting children or selling abortifacients, and he needs to arrest everyone inside and put a padlock on the door. And until the sheriff does that, I don't think this amounts to a hill of beans. The Roswell resolution cites the Declaration of Independence, listing life as the first unalienable right, and it cites a paper from the American College of Pediatricians. I will read this because this is worth hearing. The American College of Pediatricians has stated that the predominance of human biological research confirms that human life begins at conception/fertilization. At fertilization, the human being emerges as a whole, genetically distinct, individuated, zygotic living human organism, a member of the species Homo sapiens, needing only the proper environment to grow and develop. The difference between the individual in its adult state and in its zygotic state is one of form, not nature. Well, there you go. And so there once you accept that as the truth, which that is the truth, and if you don't accept that, you're lying to yourself. Once you accept that as truth, there's no wiggle room to say that some doctors should be able to object or we should respect the current rules about butchering children. No. You have to say that we will not allow abortion to happen in our community. If it does, it's a crime. It's a capital crime. But that's not what the student council there in Roswell did. And as far as I know, that's not one single sheriff has ever done. And if one single sheriff would do it, you might be surprised what would happen. Other sheriffs might just stand up and say, yeah, you know what? It's not just the Second Amendment we care about. What about all the innocent people being killed in our jurisdiction? How about that? Maybe if the sheriff in County A stood up, maybe the sheriff in County B might stand up. And before you know it, you'd have sheriffs standing up all over. But it takes that. There's one sheriff who's got to step out there and risk his political career and maybe risk going to jail, right? Anyway, I don't want to get into this whole, I'm going to move on, okay? I'm going to move on because, well, frankly, I'm almost out of time and I'm trying to figure out what story do I want to get to. Well, you know what? I don't think it's this one. No. Well, hold on, though. Here we go. This is from the Bad Religion file. And this is really, and that religion, by the way, being the religion of bureaucracy. I believe that bureaucrats, some of them, border on worshiping the rules. And they'll do anything to worship the rules and to satisfy their boss and their quotas and whatever it is. I've never worked for a bureaucracy. Well, I did when I was in the service, and I didn't like it. I wanted out. I thought, I can't do this, you know. But here's what bureaucracy does to people. The United Kingdom, the government of England, has denied asylum to an Iranian convert to Christianity, saying they are disagreeing with the Iranian convert's contention that Christianity is a peaceful religion. So listen to this. So the Iranian said, I converted to Christianity because it was a peaceful religion. He converted from Islam. Well, the UK Home Office, who was reviewing his asylum request, and by the way, the Iranian government does capture, blackmail, shake down, imprison, and kill Christians all the time. It happens all the time. So if someone's fleeing Iran and they say they've converted to Christianity, you could at least give them the benefit of the doubt at their hearing, okay? And here's what the Home Office said. They said, they sent the Iranian a letter that said the Book of Revelation is, quote, filled with imagery of revenge, destruction, death, and violence. It then went on to, unquote, it then went on to cite excerpts from the Bible and then said, quote, these examples are inconsistent with your claim that Christianity is a peaceful religion, as opposed to Islam, which contains violence, rage, and revenge. So the UK Home Office basically equated Christianity and Islam because there's violence in the Book of Revelation. And they told this guy, we're going to reject your asylum request because the religion you've converted to is just as violent as Islam. And here's the thing, folks. There's a lot of pressure on the bureaucrats in the immigration system in the United Kingdom to reject asylum requests. And I'm for rejecting most asylum requests. Don't get me wrong. But this bureaucrat has gone to an extremely insane length to come up with an excuse to block this particular Iranian refugee. And it gets worse. The UK also said to another asylumee who was rejected, the UK actually said this in their rejection. You affirmed in your asylum application that Jesus is your savior, but then you claim that he would not be able to save you from the Iranian regime. Therefore, you have no conviction in your faith and your belief in Jesus is half-hearted. That's what they said. And then they rejected the asylumee's application, trying to flee the demonic, satanic, antichrist government of the mad mullahs in Iran. And that is just... Well, that's bad religion. It's like this one. From the Queering of America file, a Christian university has once again, listen to this, a Christian university has once again lifted a ban on same-sex relationships on its campus several months after reinstating the ban, after the ban had been initially lifted in the late summer of last year. So this is a schizophrenic Pacific University. I'm sorry, Azusa Pacific University doesn't seem to know or be able to make up their mind about how they feel about homos. And here's what they've said now that they've... Where are they now? This week, they've lifted the ban on homos. They say, quote, Schizophrenic Pacific University is an open enrollment institution which does not require students to be Christian to attend. And our handbook conveys our commitment to treating everyone with Christ-like care and civility. Our values are unchanged. And the Schizophrenic Pacific University community remains unequivocally biblical in our Christian evangelical identity. So did you catch that? They said our values are unchanged. They've changed their values three times since the summer. So let alone, your values are falling through the floor. You're going straight to hell in a handbasket with most other Christian universities and most other universities in general. You've all become unprofitable. The whole lot of you. Keep your kids out. I hope my kids don't want to go to college anyway. All right, I want to close by saying goodbye to my friend Tom Healy, and I want to send my condolences out to his lovely wife, Madeline. I'm sad that Tom has passed, but I'm glad for the end to his suffering, and I am looking forward to experience what he is experiencing right now, which is his introduction to glory and eternity. Tom, I will see you again soon, my brother. I hope you are still listening. That's it for the Weekly Worldview, folks. I want to thank my friends at KGOV.com and AmericanRightToLife.com. And, of course, my other brother, Daryl, who makes it all happen here in the Weekly Worldview studios. Should the Lord tarry, we will return next week. Until then, may the grace of God go with you. And may the peace of Jesus Christ be upon you.